You wait till I get Joe Frazier. I'm gonna whoop Joe Frazier. I'm gonna show him who the real world champion is. We gonna settle this
down.
We just signed the contract and it's all over. You get your ticket, you come to see it, because I'm gonna give him a good whooping.
They called it the fight of the century. 50 years ago today, undefeated Muhammad Ali squared off against undefeated Joe Frazier in Madison Square Garden, the hottest ticket in town, with the World Heavyweight Championship on the line. The fight transcended sports, capturing the entire planet's attention. And today, a man who knows more about this fight than I will ever know about anything, ESPN's Jeremy Schapp, tells us why, a half century later, Ali Frazier won has yet to be topped. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, March 8th. This is ESPN Daily. Jeremy, it's great to talk to the only person I know who I believe has childhood photographs of themselves with Muhammad Ali.
You should meet my sister. She does as well, Pablo. Yeah, no. I do. It's my claim to fame.
Jeremy Schapp hosts E60 and Outside the Lines. He's studied and written about boxing for decades.
In 1974, when Ali was preparing to head to Zaire to fight George Foreman, my father at the time was the editor of Sport Magazine. And he had a long relationship with Ali going back to before the 1960 Olympics. So they were close. And for this cover shoot for Sport Magazine previewing the Rumble in the Jungle, Ali was dressed up in a safari outfit with a pith helmet on, the whole deal. And I went to the shoot, my sister and I was probably just about to turn five. And got some good pictures of, you know, Muhammad, you know, playfully knocking us in the head. It's cool. I grant you. You know, if there's one person you could have a picture of 1974 as a little kid, sports enthusiast such as myself, it would be Muhammad Ali.
Yes, yes. So I'm actually here, Jeremy, because I want you to jump in the time machine with me. And I want to go back to before that photograph was taken, all the way back to March 8th, 1971, exactly 50 years ago today, because that's the day Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, they're about to walk into the ring for what would always be known as the fight of the century. And when I say that phrase to you now, the fight of the century, what comes to mind?
I was asked this question recently, like, if I could pick one sports moment to have been present at ever in the history of the world, what would it be? For me, it would be March 8th, 1971 at Madison Square Garden, because mostly it's Ali, who is the most compelling figure in the history of sports, because he was the undefeated heavyweight champion, lineal heavyweight champion. Whereas Joe Frazier was a couple of years his junior, was the undefeated titular champion who had ascended to the championship after Ali was banished from boxing in 1967 for refusing induction into the armed forces. So two men with legitimate claims to the heavyweight championship at a time in our country and around the world when being the heavyweight champion of the world was still the biggest thing in sports. And these were two of the all-time greats. And so there is the thrill of the unknown. They have never faced each other before. Neither of them has fought anyone as formidable as the other before. And beyond the actual combat in the ring, beyond the athletic component of this story, there is the backdrop and there is the significance because of what these two men represent.
The time period, more broadly in America, that we're talking about, it feels like the word volatility, Jeremy, kind of undersells it. How would you begin to explain what the country was like at that point?
The war is still raging in Vietnam. All of the culture wars of the 1960s are still being fought. We're just a few years removed from the assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert Kennedy. This is a fraught time in American history when the forces of change and progress are building, but there is still quite a lot of resistance, of course. And Muhammad Ali, to millions upon millions of Americans is still this threatening figure.
Clay or Muhammad Ali, whatever he wants to call himself, is a disgrace to the nation.
He is not the Muhammad Ali who was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, someone who lit the Olympic torch. Ali changed and the world caught up to him. But this is before all that. And there is no figure in the history of sports who provoked reactions this strong.
Outside the ring at the time, Jeremy, how would you begin to describe who Muhammad Ali was as a public figure?
Muhammad Ali was, this is a simplification, a controversial figure. He was a lightning rod. He was the world heavyweight champion beginning in 1964 with a stunning upset against Sonny Liston.
Yeah, and I upset Sonny Liston, and I just turned 22 years old. I must be the greatest.
And he defends the title successfully against him with a quick knockout in Lewiston, Maine the following year, 1965. In 1966, 1967, he is this transcendent heavyweight, but he is controversial because he has dared to change his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. He has joined the Nation of Islam. He has become an acolyte of its leader, Elijah Muhammad, and Elijah Muhammad's lieutenant, Malcolm X. He has dared to challenge white society by promoting black empowerment. And then in 1967, he refuses induction in the armed forces. He takes a principled stand. He doesn't want to go to Vietnam. And for it, he loses his title. And he spends the next 3 years in boxing exile. And millions upon millions of people hate him for the decisions that he has made.
A lot of them won't be whipped because of the draft. A lot of them won't be whipped because of religion. A lot of them won't be whipped because I'm black.
And now he's coming back. Now, after his exile, he's got his license again, and he is going to take back the championship that was stolen from him.
So I want to get a better sense of who Ali was at the time as a fighter, Jeremy, in March of 1971. Who was he in the ring at that point?
Well, we were learning, right? It was a little bit of a mystery. He had had two fights since returning from his banishment. You know, he's banned in 1967. He's back boxing starting in 1970. And it starts off with a fight against Jerry Quarry, and Ali's impressive. And then he fights Oscar Bonavina, a tough, awkward, unconventional Argentinian heavyweight. And it's not that pretty for Muhammad Ali.
Where is that circling? Where is that boxing? Where is the speed of hands? One wonders if Ali is hurt.
And he has trouble ending the fight against Bonavina, which he does. But the Ali who is still in the mind's eye of the public is the Ali who we saw from 1964 to 1967, when he was this remarkable, unprecedented type of heavyweight. He's 6'2", 6'3", 215 pounds, and he is lightning fast. He's like Sugar Ray Robinson fast, but he's 50 pounds heavier. No one's ever seen anything like it. And he ceased to exist in banishment.
Mm.
He was diminished when he came back. He was a different kind of fighter. The young Ali is giving 3-4 punches for everyone he takes. The Ali who comes back in 1970 is taking more than giving. But nobody knew who he was stepping into the ring that night.
And so in the other corner, Jeremy.
Yes.
Is Joe Frazier. Who is he as a fighter, as this public figure in contrast?
Joe Frazier is the heavyweight champion of the world, undisputed. Like Ali, he had won an Olympic gold medal. He'd won his gold medal in 1964 in Tokyo. And he is a tough Philadelphia fighter. He embodies the boxing ethos of that city, the relentlessness. He's always moving ahead. He is always coming after you. And he's unusual in the respect, too, that his best weapon is this fearsome left hook.
A left hook opens the cut above Shivalo's eye, and the referee wisely stops the fight.
I think it's fair to say there aren't many iconic left hooks in right. boxing history. And Joe Frazier's left hook is one of the legendary weapons in the sport. It's not artistry, it's power. And so stylistically, he and Ali are diametrically opposed as well.
So what was their shared history, Jeremy, with each other at this point?
It's complicated because, you know, they didn't have a history in the ring together. And by the time Frazier's emerging as a professional, Ali is in banishment. There are stories that at this time, and they've been disputed, I'm not sure whether they're true, that when Ali was out of boxing and short on funds, that Frazier gave him some money. Some people say it happened. Some people say it didn't happen. But Ali is, he's saying things about Frazier that are, how do I put this? Unkind.
He's too ugly to be the world heavyweight champion.
Ali's a showman.
Do I think I can whoop Joe Frazier? This might shock and amaze you, but I will retire Joe Frazier.
And Ali has always said these kinds of things about his opponents.
How do you feel, champ?
But with Frazier is a very proud guy. He's not someone who is comfortable selling a fight with his mouth the way that Muhammad Ali was. And although Ali, you could argue he was saying the things that he was saying about Joe Frazier, calling him ignorant and calling him an Uncle Tom and all of these hateful things, Ali in his mind was doing it, I think, to sell fights, but that wasn't good enough for Joe Frazier. I was talking to Larry Holmes about this the other day, the heavyweight champion who was a sparring partner for both of them. And he said, Frazier hated Ali for it.
That bothered Joe. Joe wanted the respect and Ali didn't give it to him. That's why he was trying to kill him.
And of course, you can imagine from Joe Frazier's perspective, right? He wanted his respect too. And he was the world heavyweight champion. Being the world heavyweight champion is supposed to bring with it prestige and respect and deference. And that certainly wasn't coming from Muhammad Ali.
Jeremy, in terms of the psychology of the public and who they wanted to win, who they were rooting for, how did that break down across society?
The way it's been explained for half a century is fairly accurate. People who considered themselves the establishment, people who had supported the war effort, people who were threatened by African-American empowerment, were rooting against Muhammad Ali. There's no question that Muhammad Ali was the preferred choice of Black America. And I think there's little doubt that Joe Frazier was the preferred choice of white America, with obviously big caveats for large segments of the population that loved Ali, who were white, and who might have represented the youth movement, the counterculture, people who were against the war. And that's why, you know, why this fight rises above mere athletic contest to something even more significant. And it would have been significant enough just to see these two guys fighting each other.
Okay, coming up, the grand spectacle of fight night and what happened in the ring.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So when the date gets set and the venue is picked and it's announced that they're going to do this thing at Madison Square Garden in the middle of the beating heart of New York City, Jeremy, in 1971, what was the buildup to the fight like?
It's the most hyped sports event ever.
Heavyweight boxers Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali meet in New York's Madison Square Garden Monday night, what one promoter calls the biggest fight since Cain tangled with Abel.
Two legitimate heavyweight champions with legitimate claims to the title, neither of whom has ever been defeated, representing different sections, cohorts of our society. The interest was there, but they built it and they built it and they built it to a kind of boiling point at which everyone wanted to see it.
All right, Jeremy. So here we go. It's March 8th, 1971, 50 years ago exactly today. And the electricity is coursing through Madison Square Garden. And I have heard myth and legend about this building on this night in particular. So what was that scene like?
It was an unprecedented scene. It was wild. The celebrities. Frank Sinatra is ringside shooting for Life magazine, apparently because he couldn't get a good ticket. So he takes this assignment.
I don't understand how that
sounds
possible.
Crazy, Pablo. Well, they're just, you know, this is the ticket. I would argue this is the ticket at this point in the history of the world. Mm. So even Frank had competition for this event. Burt Lancaster, you know, the star of From Here to Eternity, he's calling the fight on the closed circuit production with Don Dunphy.
In a moment, we should be seeing Joe Frazier. In just a moment, I think we'll be seeing Joe Frazier. It is characteristic, as you know, for the challenger, which is the position that Muhammad Ali is in now, to come out first. Here comes Anthony.
I love Burt Lancaster, but he doesn't do a great job. You know, Diana Ross is there. Dustin Hoffman is there. Barbara Streisand is there. Diane Carroll is there. Bill Cosby is there, talking to the press before the fight. The biggest stars in the world have converged on West 33rd Street to see this fight, to be there, and anyone who's anyone in New York and beyond wants to be there. It's 1971, so if you go and look at the pictures,
I mean
the outfits.
The furs, Jeremy.
They're extraordinary, right?
Extraordinary.
I mean, totally politically incorrect
now.
Yes,
of course.
They'd all have to be faux furs, but they were real then. And they are ermines, and they are minks, and they are foxes, and everyone is wearing them. And the world is coming, as you said, to a stop, to pause for an hour to watch this. All over the world, people were watching it. I think the estimates are that more than 300 million people watched the fight either that night or in the following days.
Well, how could they watch this thing, Jeremy? Because the U.S. population at the time, by the way, 200 million or so. How could you watch this thing if you did not have a ticket?
There were, if not thousands, at least hundreds of theaters around the country that were showing it on the technology at the time that was called closed circuit. Bing Crosby couldn't get a ticket.
Bing Crosby is being shut out.
Bing Crosby watched it at Radio City Music Hall, basically three quarters of a mile north and east, because at a theater, the enormous Radio City Music Hall theater, because he couldn't get a ticket to Madison Square Garden.
Mm.
And that's how thousands of people around the U.S. were watching it, and in other parts of the world as well, on closed circuit. And I hate to harp on this because he was so great, but unfortunately, they're listening to Burt Lancaster working it because he was a friend of the promoter, Jerry Parencio. He got the gig, great voice, great pipes, but wasn't doing it. And poor Archie Moore.
What do you say, Archie, about that?
I think they are in tremendous.
The great former light heavyweight champion. He's the third man in the booth, and he barely got a word in edgewise.
Archie, tell me. Go ahead, Don. You want something you want to make say?
No, I think that Johnny Addy is about to introduce him, though, Bert, and Archie will be back to you in just a moment. Here's the.
Okay, so all across the planet, everybody is engaging in one of the honestly impossible monocultural moments that we've ever seen. What happened? What did people see when the bell rang?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
To my eye, I just watched the fight again last night. It is It's stunning how much action takes place in this fight.
Piling up points with those jabs. Don't forget that.
You know, two big guys, 215 pounds for Ali, 205 pounds for Joe Frazier, and the action is nonstop.
Joe looks like he's in a training session.
Especially in the first 10 rounds.
Frazier's just pouring everything in there now.
And Joe Frazier, he just never stops coming.
Punches, but punishing punches.
He keeps coming. He keeps moving ahead.
I don't know anyone who gets the sheer joy of combat the way Joe Frazier does.
Moving forward, circling out, well, not even circling, just plowing right into him, throwing punch after punch after punch. The first two or three rounds, I think you could fairly argue Ali won two out of three of them. You could also argue that Frazier won two out of three of them, or all three of them. But Ali looks like Ali. He's not really up on his toes fighting in the style of Muhammad Ali of 1965 or 1966. He's throwing flurries. He's quick. And the action is just, the metabolism of it is spectacular.
What a fight. What a pace. I've never seen a pace like this. Archie, have you ever seen a faster type of fight than
no,
this?
No, never.
And after six rounds, Ali kind of visibly loses steam.
Ali seems a little disgusted with himself, but he's mighty tired. I'd say he's having a tough time handling Frazier. Wouldn't you, Archie?
I think he's running out of his steam.
One of the people I interviewed was Gene Kilroy, who was Ali's longtime business manager, was there in the corner with him that night. And he said, look, you know, he wasn't going to beat Joe Frazier that night.
I tell everybody, that night at that fight, nobody would have beat Joe Frazier. I don't care if Ali came in the ring with hand grenades. Frazier was in the zone. Nobody would have beat him.
That's the way it looks now. Of course, that's with hindsight. That's knowing that Frazier emerges with the victory. But when you're watching the fight, you know how sometimes, Pablo, you watch like the NFL from 1970 or the NBA from 1970 or baseball, and everything looks slow.
Yeah, like you're playing against like postmen or something.
Yeah, the bat moves more slow. Everything just looks slow. Here it looks sped up. It does to me. Maybe I'm romanticizing it. I have a tendency to do that with these historic fights, but it just seems elevated.
So it is worth noting, Jeremy, that fights in modern times, they stop at 12 rounds due to safety concerns and health concerns. But in this one, we get deep into the 15th and Frazier is leading on the scorecards. And how does the fight of the century come to an end?
Well, you really have to go back to the end of 11. So at the end of the 11th round, Frazier throws, to use the hoary cliche, a textbook left hook. And I mean, it lands flush on Muhammad Ali's jaw. I mean, Ali is staggered. I mean, he's listing. I mean, you think he's going down, and somehow he steadies himself.
Muhammad Ali in real trouble.
But he is rocked in a way that he's never been rocked.
Muhammad Ali rocks him to the ropes. He almost went down.
But then the left hooks just keep coming. They keep coming. And as the fight is winding down in the 15th round.
All right, this is the final round of the fight, and what a fight it's been.
15 and final round.
Step back, says the referee. Time is important here.
Boom. Frazier lands another. Not as big as the one in the 11th, but this is 15 minutes later, and the Muhammad Ali of round 11, he's history, and he goes down.
Muhammad Ali was flat on his back, but he's a well-conditioned athlete. However, he is real tired.
And he goes down for a split second. I don't know how he got up. He gets up. I mean, he goes down. It's a knockdown, but he gets right back up, standing eight count, comes back out. and the fight ends.
And still, heavyweight champion of the world, Joe Frazier.
Joe Frazier. For the first time in his career, Muhammad Ali was beaten.
So, Frazier is the winner of the fight of the century by unanimous decision. Did that feel controversial at the time? What was the mood around the outcome?
I think everybody agreed that Frazier won the fight. I think Muhammad Ali knew that Frazier won the fight. It didn't stop him from going around and saying that he thought he had won the fight and insisting that he had won the fight and fighting, how should we put it, with an alternate set of facts. But Joe Frazier won that fight. And in the moment, you know, again, people didn't have replays to lean on. They didn't have Sports Center highlight packages to watch. You know, you kind of had to see it in the moment. No one could have, I think, argued that Muhammad Ali got robbed. Joe Frazier won that fight.
Coming up, how we remember the fight of the century and its place in the culture and history of the United States.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You know, just to dwell on it once more, fellas, if you picked up the papers tomorrow, if you didn't see the fight and you saw Joe Frazier won a unanimous decision, you might think it was a nothing fight, and it was far from that.
Right.
Because it was so close.
That's right.
So that's the verdict at the time. But as you know, Jeremy, as the sands of time begin to wash over our memories, funny things happen. What's your sense of how people remember Ali now, given the context of that specific fight?
Look, I think Bert Sugar put it best, the famous boxing historian and writer. He said, you know, the winner lost and the loser won. And not just in people's memories, but which I think is the case, but in terms of where they stood even at the time. I mean, Ali didn't just win because people remember it in a certain way, which is unfair to Frazier, but he won because even the people who loathed him, even the people who hated him for changing his name from what he called his slave name to a Muslim name, the people who hated him for converting, for joining the Nation of Islam, the people who hated him for refusing induction, for criticizing the war effort, they had to concede. Everyone had to concede that not only could Muhammad Ali take a punch, but he withstood an incredible onslaught that night. In the context of boxing, in the context of what those guys do, and the way that people thought about it, Muhammad Ali acquitted himself honorably, and he brought honor to the sport and to himself by taking that punishment, by withstanding the onslaught, and showing everyone. You know, there were questions before, oh, he wins all these fights and quick knocks out and knockouts, and he's always joking around in the ring, and he doesn't take it seriously, and he disgraces the sport. Nobody could say that after March 8th, 1971. Nobody could say that with a straight face. And that's why he wins, too.
What did this fight do, Jeremy, for the trajectory, his career, his public persona, the trajectory of Joe Frazier going forward from there?
Well, for Joe Frazier, you know, it's this spectacular moment. And yet, even in the moment, he knew that he would never escape the shadow of Muhammad Ali. And he expressed that, I think Jerry Eisenberg, the great sports writer from the Star Ledger, covered boxing so long when I was talking to him last week. I think he said, Joe said those exact words to him in the days after the fight.
He says to me, you saw the tape, you told me you saw it clear for you. You know it happened. You know I won the fight. So you tell me what I got to do. What the hell I got to do to get out of this guy's shadow. Prophetic. He's remained in Ali's shadow his whole life.
And the answer is, of course, there was nothing he could do.
Looking back at this now, Jeremy, it's this perfect storm of sociology and politics and religion and athletics, all of this combined into one thing. If you tinker with any parts of that equation, who the fighters were, the climate politically, the venue even, do you think this event is still such a massive part of American cultural history?
No, it's the perfect storm. I think you're right. The story is still Muhammad Ali, but because it was Joe Frazier, he lost. And so that changes it. And I think gives it more layers and more depth and more meaning. And beyond that, it makes what happens in Zaire in October 1974 more significant. Reclaiming the championship as an older man, as a distinct underdog. The whole trajectory of it, right? It's like, what is that, like the butterfly effect? Whatever it is, like if you change any of it, the arc of the greatest career in the history of sports is altered. What if Ali wins, then there's no great upset against Foreman. If Ali wins, Foreman doesn't beat Frazier. You know, the whole thing is thrown out of whack. But you're talking about the bigger stuff, frankly. And that's the societal stuff, the significance, the way these guys were proxies for this culture war that was still at its very peak. The hard hats versus the hippies. All of that, that was unfolding in New York and everywhere else. In a country in which, Richard Nixon was president and George McGovern was about to be nominated to run against him. I mean, you can't, maybe 2020 proves me wrong, but you couldn't basically get more different than that, right? And here are these two guys who are fighting as representatives, Ali consciously, I think Frazier less consciously, of these warring parties. I've been to a lot of big sports events. You have too. World Cup finals. Yeah, more people are watching, more numbers, but they're not invested the way they were. And this is two people. This is boxing. This is the hardest thing in sports, trying to knock out the guy across the ring when he's that skilled and that strong and that well-conditioned, and to stand in there for 15 rounds and do what the two of them did, I don't know. To me, it's moving. I'm jealous. I didn't get to be there. I didn't get to cover it. I didn't get to cover these guys. You know, you and I are both guys who got into this business, I think, to cover sports in a way that transcends just what's going on the field, but also to be there for the big moments, right? And to be present at history and to record it. And it was impossible for anyone to dismiss this as, oh, it's just a fight. Oh, this is just sports. This is Ali Frazier one. And it meant something to everyone.
Jeremy Schapp, thank you for sharing how much the fight of the century means to you.
It's my pleasure, Pablo. I wish we could have been there. You know, they gave all the media these red caps so that they could be instantly identified, you know, not just mixing in with the crowd. I wish we could have been there together. It would have been something.
It would have been my honor to ride on your shoulders and wear a giant trench coat and try to sneak into Madison Square Garden. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.